We hope you are healthy and happy today. Our KGVM 95.9 FM program possibly can help you achieve a greater degree of health and happiness. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. We host this program, Health and Happiness, every Monday at 7 p.m. and with a repeat performance on Thursday mornings. We thank the Public Education Committee of the Montana Psychological Association for being supportive of us. We thank KGVM's Bob Wall for the expert engineering to broadcast this information. Now Dr. Suzanne will introduce today's program.
In Montana, 10.77% of residents reported using illicit, illegal, dangerous drugs in the past month. That's above the national average, which is around 8%. Also, we rank fourth for teenage drug use. From the DHS, about 22,000 people go to Montana hospitals due to drugs and alcohol. An estimated 90,000 teens and adults have a substance use disorder. Sadly and horribly, more than 90% of those did not receive treatment. While we were recently honored to have Stacy Zinn on air with us to provide a clear picture of the dire inroads being made into our communities by the drug industry, while that was appalling, we're happy today. And for this program that we have Rick Gale and the Elks of Bozeman and across the United States, the Elks have an actual on-the-ground effort to tackle drugs. We are so entirely proud of the Elks for the work they're doing in this arena. And while Rick is going to talk to us about the Elks, he's also had a long and varied and fascinating career, which we hope to hear about too. Welcome, Rick.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be a part of today's show.
Well, we'd love to have you share with us your beginnings and your work with the police agencies, and give us a little sketch of that part of your life.
Sure can. Well, let's go back to 1994. I was working with Irvine Police Department at the time as a reserve police officer and teaching high school at the same time, and Irvine PD thought, you know, we'd like for you to attend the DARE program since you are working with students. So I completed the DARE training with the Los Angeles Police Department and LA Unified School District. And at the time, we referred to it as the Senior High School DARE Training Program. So with that said, not 20 years ago, the Elks had learned about my involvement in Los Angeles, Southern California, as far as drug awareness programs. And they said, hey, we'd like for you to support our efforts with the Elks Drug Awareness Program. And at the time, I didn't know a lot about what they were doing and was quite surprised to learn about their efforts nationwide. So what I learned is that the Elks Drug Awareness Program is the largest volunteer drug awareness program in the United States. And since 1982, the Elks have developed an effective community-based drug prevention program by partnering with federal agencies, including the DEA. And I know that you talked to Stacy, who is a special agent in Billings. The Elks also work with the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. So these are partnerships that ensure the Elks Drug Awareness Program addresses the leading drug abuse issues facing our community today. So that's my beginning and a little history as far as my involvement in drug awareness programs and the effort to address issues that communities are facing across the country.
Very interesting to hear about the work that the Elks do. And so did you begin that where you were at that time, or did you come up here to begin working with that program?
So my wife and I moved to Bozeman 17 years ago, and semi-retired. The Elks heard about my work. I looked at the Elks Lodge because I really liked what they were doing in the community in a lot of different programs, and they asked me to become a chairman for the state as far as working with other Elks members, volunteers throughout Montana, which I did for 3 years. And one of the things I always promoted was Red Ribbon Week, and that's coming up on October 23rd through October 31st. The Elks Drug Awareness Program will partner with the DEA for Red Ribbon Week that highlights the importance of living drug-free, and it presents an opportunity for parents, educators, and communities to reinforce the drug-free messages they share with their children throughout the year. You know, ongoing messaging and conversations with kids. And then on October 28th, the Bozeman Elks will partner with the Missouri River Drug Task Force for the DEA National Prescription Drug Takeback Day, and that will take place at the Gallatin County Law and Justice Center from 10 a.m. through 2 p.m.
Okay, if you could tell us a little bit more, what actually is the Red Ribbon Program?
River.
Well, it got started, down in Southern California, and it was a way to honor Enrique Kiki Marina, who was working with the DEA at the time, and his efforts and investigations. He was kidnapped and disappeared for a few days before he was located with the help with investigators looking at what happened to Kiki. So it was a way to celebrate Red Ribbon Week, and it is the nation's oldest and largest drug prevention awareness program. So currently, the National Family Partnership started Red Ribbon Week after the death of Drug Enforcement Administration Special Agent Enrique Kiki Camarena. And he had quite a colorful history as well. And that's where it all got started with what he was doing in his efforts in investigating drug trafficking out of Mexico into the United States.
And so people wear red ribbons in honor of his efforts and all of the efforts going on.
Exactly. And it's what I've seen throughout the country are activities to honor Kiki, as well as messaging. And there are contests that are held throughout the United States, and that's promoted, you know, by the DEA as well as the National Family Partnership.
And so do we just buy some red ribbon and make a little ribbon, or do those get handed out by the Elks? How does that exactly happen?
Well, usually what we see is red ribbons are circulated in the community, you know, by volunteers at meetings, you know. That's one of the efforts that we're involved in with the Elks Drug Awareness Program. So at various gatherings and meetings, you know, we promote Red Ribbon Week, and here are ways that you can support that effort and messaging that you can share. And if you just, you know, if you Google Red Ribbon Week, there's a lot of resources from the DEA as well as the National Family Partnership to see what you can do specifically as far as supporting the event.
That's just great. And tell us a little bit more, what exactly is a drug give back?
Well, every year, twice a year, there is the DEA National Prescription Drug Takeback Day. And it's a way for families to remove unwanted drugs, prescription drugs, from their home, and a safe way to dispose of prescription drugs. So what will happen throughout the country is there will be events, collection centers where people can drive through and drop off those unwanted prescription drugs so they don't wind up in the wrong hands. One of the other things that we do with the Missouri River Drug Task Force is a lot of times in real estate, we encourage agents to make sure there are no prescription drugs, you know, sitting in medicine cabinets as people come through the home. I mean, that's it's a small suggestion that we make. But again, it's the messaging. And the other thing that we've done here in Southwest Montana, Bozeman Elks Lodge, we got funding to place prescription drug take-back boxes throughout Gallatin County. And again, that's for the Elks National Foundation and funding that we got through our application. So the Elks, we have placed prescription drug take-back boxes at the Bozeman Public Safety Center. And you walk in and make an immediate left to our security room, and it's there for people to drop off those unwanted prescription drugs. We have the same box at the Gallatin County Law and Justice Center. And you walk in and there's instructions on how to, you know, leave those pills, how to place those pills into a plastic bag and then drop them into the box, like a mailbox. We also placed a box in Manhattan Police Department, City Hall. We placed one up at the Sheriff's Department in Big Sky. And we placed one in West Yellowstone at one of their community center. So over the last several years, we have placed these boxes to make them available to communities. Three Forks as well. So we've made an effort to cover Southwest Montana and our efforts to support the DEA and what they're doing as far as the messaging and getting those unwanted prescription drugs disposed of properly.
So what we're saying is that it's not a good idea to keep those pain meds left over from your recent surgery in the medicine cabinet because other people might come along and pick those up. And so it's best just to take all of those and dispose of them. Is that kind of the concept?
Well, that's an outreach we've made with realtors and showing homes, you know, open houses for people coming in to walk through the house. It's a small thing, you know, make sure that those prescription drugs are not sitting out where they could be grabbed.
But that would be the same in any household with people coming and going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that, you know, kids don't, you know, younger youth don't look at those and go, hey, this is something like that, you know, I want to experiment with. Just that they're not available to youth as well.
Exactly. Exactly. Because what Stacy was mentioning, that sometimes just one or two pills can get someone started. So we don't want to be casual about any kind of prescription drugs and medications.
Exactly.
And I was really proud in studying through this that the Elks also have a wonderful character, Elroy the Elk, who's a mascot, and he reminds young kids that hugs are better than drugs. And so that's an old phrase that we all appreciate. I suppose that came from the Elks. That's great.
Yeah, it sure did. And there have been a few times where I have put on the costume for parades and walked down this Manhattan and, you know, shook hands with kids, waved at kids, and promoted our drug awareness program. So, yeah, there's been some times where I put on that costume and had fun with it.
Oh, that's delightful. Tell us about some of the other things you do for the children to help them learn about the bad side of drugs.
Well, you know, again, it's ongoing messaging, but what we'd like to see is kids involved in activities, some options for kids. So something I'm really proud of is Elks National Hoop Shoot, and It's a free throw program for youth ages 8 through 13, so we're promoting it now. So each year, the six hoop shoot national champions will have their names listed alongside their picture in a brand new digital exhibit and Nat Smith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. Woo! Now, the kids that compete and, you know, they win the contest here locally, which will be on November 4th in Manhattan School Gym from 9 o'clock through noon. So if they compete and get those shots in, the most hoops shooting numbers, they will move on to Livingston and a regional event, and they're on to the national championships eventually. And all expenses are paid for the parents to go with their kids. You know, the flight, the hotel room, yeah, all the expenses are handled through the Elks program. But again, it's a way for kids to get involved in activities, just to be active in the community with an activity, with those kinds of events.
That's so excellent. And how do you get the word out to the schools about this and to the young people, Rick?
Well, what we've done, our volunteers have gone out to all the elementary schools and distributed materials throughout this county. And that happened last week that we did that, circulated information materials that we dropped off at all these schools throughout Gallatin County.
Wow. And I noted that you have videos, coloring books, posters, and public service announcements all made up. How does anyone out in the public wanting to help get a hold of these materials?
Well, a lot of times we'll have special events at our lodge when we make those materials available. And along with the hoop shoot, you know, with the Elks Rug Awareness Program, there's materials, resources available online for parents to take a look at as far as materials, resources, having that conversation with youth, you know, all the way through middle school and high school.
Excellent. So do you actually get to go in and provide programs about drug abuse in the schools?
We have. There have been invites to come in and talk to parent groups at the middle schools, elementary schools, and typically what happens is we'll work with the parent teacher association or the PAP group and let them know that we're available to come in and share information that we have, materials, resources. We've also gone into health classes in Belgrade, and we have partnered with the teachers, with the health teachers, to talk about drug prevention and just making them aware of some issues and dangers and the risk involved with that choice to use or to experiment with drugs.
And Carl Roston, the statewide supervisor for drug prevention and suicide, had said that suicide escalated hugely during and after COVID. Have you noticed anything in your work about that? It to me makes it even more pivotal to help these youngsters.
Yes, that's an area that you know, we look at as far as our messaging and trying to provide resources. We have a seat at the table here in Gallatin County at the Mental Health Local Advisory Council. So we're at the table, and we're there sharing information and resources that we have for those groups who sit at that table. And, again, ongoing efforts and meetings with counselors, you know, how can we work with you? How can we partner as we take a look at suicide? And the other program that I'm also excited about is the Montana 988+1. I am a Vietnam veteran, and I know that we've had a lot of numbers, and we see the stats as far as veteran suicide in Montana, which is one of the highest in the country. So the partnership includes the American Legion Post 14, Bozeman Elks Lodge 463, and the Vietnam Veterans of Southwest Montana. So we're working jointly with Montana State University, Veteran Support Center, School of Art, and the Montana 988 Project to promote suicide prevention themed challenge coins meant to increase awareness of suicide and resources available to help people, including veterans, who are in crisis. So our effort is about a partnership with these different groups and to use 988. And we've worked with the Help Center here in Bozeman. In fact, we're meeting with them tonight at our lodge meeting to discuss ongoing efforts to promote awareness of suicide and what the resources are out there. So we work with MSU very closely, Todd Butcher, who's the director of MSU Veteran Services, and we work with Bruce Barnhart, who's an instructor in MSU School of Art. What we did is we decided to come up with a challenge coin that we present to veterans and families. So veterans sat down with students from the School of Art, and we created more than 30 challenge coins. You know, each design includes Montana Suicide Prevention and Mental Health Crisis Lifeline, number 988 on the one side, and then on the other side, the 988 plus one on the other side. So one of the coins was designed by Erica Avorsky. I got to work with her, and the coin represents the beauty of Montana while providing a resource to both veterans and civilians when this place, Montana, feels too big. And also the information on the Veterans Crisis Line. So, yes, ongoing efforts and partnerships to promote awareness of the resources that are available to help people, including youth.
I'm so impressed by the interactions with all the different agencies that the Elks have been able to establish, because I really believe that's what begins to really make an impact when we all work together, like the Help Center, whom we've had on so many times. They have the same concerns that you do, and many other agencies, and we really appreciate that the Elks work so hard and so well at this. I had another question, Rick. What are fatal vision goggles?
Well, what those are, it simulates impaired driving. So we've been in advance at Montana State University where we have students put those on and have them, you know, walk the line. Just like if you were out as a police officer and you're doing the field sobriety test, and give them an idea of what it looks like being impaired at different levels. And there have been times where we actually put people on bicycles or three-wheel bicycles. We didn't want any injuries,
yeah,
so we
thank
put
you.
On three-wheel bicycle and had them drive a course. And there was one event that we did out at Yellowstone Harley-Davidson years ago that was kind of fun to do, and have people put on those glasses and drive that three-wheel bicycle around a course. And again, we've done that at MSU over the years and showed, worked with students, hey, take a look at this. This is what you're going to experience if you're impaired and you're trying to drive your car down the road. And what are your options? You know, Uber, you know, making sure you plan before you go out and party.
That's just excellent.
I have a question that there's no simple answer to, but in your experience, why do people get into drugs?
Well, I think some of it's experimental. Yeah, there's the peer pressure. Yeah, hey, let's try this out. So many different issues there as far as, why people, make that choice. And, you know, maybe there's a crisis going on in their life and they need something to relieve that pain. And it just the self-medication to take care of some emotional pain that they may be experiencing. So there's so many different ways that people might fall into the addiction.
I read that there's a special effort now with addressing the fentanyl crisis.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of ongoing messaging from the DEA, you know, on a national level, and meetings here in Montana with public safety people, how to respond to that when we have an incident, but the ongoing education efforts, whether it's through the media or meetings that are taking place where, you know, we have public safety meeting with families, the Missouri River Drug Task Force doing what they can to address these issues. So across the board, there's a lot of different groups trying to make sure that people understand the risks involved with fentanyl.
Stacy's in, just like to scared me half to death, because you can accidentally take fentanyl if you're not careful what you do, and that happens to young people quite a bit, she was saying, and so I really appreciate that you're approaching that effort as well.
Yes, and again, it's all about networking and sharing information with each other. And I know for me, I'm serving as a police commissioner, and I get a lot of information every day about ongoing efforts in public safety, fire and police. I have reached out to our fire chief, Josh Waldo, and, you know, what are you seeing? What's happening? Are your guys safe when they're responding to incidents? And, you know, typically, you know, if you have an incident, you know, law enforcement makes sure it's safe for our firefighters to enter an incident before they go in and administer first aid and life-saving efforts.
Yeah, it's really scary stuff when fentanyl's involved. It's so instant and so generally non-reversible. Do you, with all of this being a volunteer, again, the largest volunteer group fighting drugs in America, do you accept community volunteers who are not ELKS to help? And do you accept donations to this program?
Yeah, we do. And there are a lot of things that we do to invite the community into our lodge here in Bozeman. For example, we have the most valuable student. So we have a chance to talk to parents at those award ceremonies. Hey, this is what we're doing. Well, you know, take a look at what you'd like to do to help us out. It might be something with music on Main Street, or it might be at a, you know, a state fair as far as tabling. And hey, we'd love to have you come out and work with us. The other thing, you know, with the hoop shoot, we have a chance to talk to parents who are at that event and say, hey, help us coach this event. We're ongoing efforts to encourage community members to be a part of our efforts. And, you know, you don't have to be a member of the lodge. Again, we have a lot of events that we have at our lodge where we invite the community in to take a look at some of our work and what we're doing in the community.
Very good. And I'm assuming, since it's a national organization, that fundraising is an ongoing thing?
It is. And again, a lot of the funding we get is through the ELKS National Foundation. So a lot of ELKS, you know, they donate money to that foundation to support all the work that we do across the board in the schools, in our communities. We get donations from different groups at times. But a lot of it comes from ELKS members themselves.
So we really have a lot to thank the ELKS for, a whole lot. And I want to just reiterate that, tell us again, when is the Red Ribbon Week?
All right, so that will take place October 23rd through October 31st, and that's the annual Red Ribbon Week.
And we all wear red ribbons, yes. Mm-hmm. And then on the 28th?
That is the DEA National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, October 28th from 10 a.m. through 2 p.m. At the Gallatin County Law and Justice Center. I know that same Take-Back Day will take place in Livingston and other cities throughout the state.
Thank you, Rick. You know, we really appreciate this hard work, and while we have you, we also wanted to hear, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us, some of the epic tales of your days. Was it 14 years as a hostage negotiator?
Yes, that goes back to another time and place. So again, with my background, Irvine PD said, you know, we'd like you to consider being a crisis negotiator for us. So back in 1993, they said, Rick, we're going to send you to your training through that program, the Administration of Justice. And every year you had to update your training for recertification, which I did. So with that said, I became a negotiator for the Irvine Police Department and a part of the Irvine Unified School District Crisis Response Team when we had a situation where a student might have lost a family member and they were dealing with a lot of emotional stress, if you will. And so during the summertime, you know, I made my way up to Yellowstone to work as a park ranger. So 9 months I worked for Irvine PD, and then 3 months I worked in Yellowstone National Park as a park ranger and became a member of their special operations unit as a crisis negotiator. Things just happened, and found myself working in that capacity for the police department and the park service and a school district.
What does a hostage negotiator actually do?
Well, when you take a look at that, if you have an incident and involving some concerns about violence, and so crisis negotiators can intervene in those personal crisis situations, you know, and it might include the situation where you have a person, you know, talking about suicide. You have individuals who are emotionally disturbed. You might have a domestic violence situation, armed robberies, kidnapping, child abuse, juvenile crises, drug and alcohol abuse. So you're looking at situations where there's excessive stress situations. And what you do as a crisis negotiator is you're a good listener. And you work with that person to try to resolve the situation as best you can. And so at the same time, you know, you're working with the other part of the team, you know, that might have to make entry. That might be what you have to do. But a lot of times crisis negotiators can slow things down, you know, talk to people and try to resolve the situation together. You know, I'm not a psychologist, but I received a lot of training, you know, nationally, as well as here in Gallatin County with their team, the Gallatin County Crisis Response Team. And so it's ongoing. A lot of times I'd go in as an actor and help during the training, during that 40-hour course. So it's an ongoing training and recertification to be a crisis negotiator. So there's some skills that you learn, and you have to have this gift to connect with people, not judge people, but be a good listener.
So does the Bozeman Police Department have such a team, and does it seem to be effective?
They sure do. So Great. You have Bozeman Police Department and the Gallatin County Sheriff's Office that have the Special Operations Unit, and they have crisis negotiators.
That's good to hear. Can you tell us about any hostage situations, or is that not public information?
Well, I can share with you a story that I've spoke about, and The first time I actually had a situation was in Yellowstone National Park. And I was at home in Fishing Bridge where we lived. And I was asked to come out to assist in a situation where there was domestic violence and drugs and alcohol involved in an RV park, basically across the street from where I lived in Fishing Bridge Village. So the team was in place, the tactical people. We had set up an incident command post, we decided to evacuate a loop of the campground to make sure it was safe as we tried to engage with this person who had been drinking and had abused his girlfriend. At one point, you know, he tried to drive off in this large RV, and he was still hooked up, and he was going nowhere. So he stopped doing that. So when I arrived on the scene with two other park rangers, we didn't have cell phones that we could throw like in the big city. So I was on a bullhorn and basically, you know, introducing myself to this person inside the RV. You know, hello, I'm Rick Gale. I'm a park ranger. Can we talk? What's going on? So that went on for a good hour or so, and I was getting no response, but I continued to try to make contact with him and asked, making open-ended statements, you know, trying to connect with him. But because of the drugs and alcohol, we weren't getting anywhere. And so at some point, we actually had to make entry into the RV. I went in as part of the entry team in case, you know, we could continue having a conversation with him. And as we entered, there was a shotgun sitting on the floor next to the door as we went in. And he'd gone back into the bedroom to the back of his RV and had passed out. So we took him into custody and transported him to park headquarters in Mammoth and got him some help and intervention as far as what was going on. We made sure that his girlfriend had been taken care of. She had been assaulted. And we got her to the hospital, and we had a nurse who had specialized in intervention meet with her, talk with her about what had happened that led up to this situation. So, you know, here we are, an event that took place after I had completed my initial training. And so this went on for a good 6 hours. So, again, as a crisis negotiator, you're slowing things down. You try to make that connection with people and do the best you can so it doesn't result in some kind of violence.
We interviewed someone yesterday who had written about his experiences that were very interesting and involved crises. You need to write yours down. They sound like they would make a very interesting, book. Have you thought of that?
Well, it's actually been written about in a publication called A Ranger's Journal. We put it, my family and friends said, you got to write about your experiences, you know, doing the work that you did. So I wrote up A Ranger's Journal. You know, it was a Christmas gift to family and friends. And then some said, well, why don't you just put it out on a website, you know, and you can share your experiences with students when you are subbing, which I do as a guest teacher here in Bozeman. And that website, are you ready? It is lowercase Yellowstone 7899.org.
Hey, so any of us could go to that and read it.
Yeah, they're short stories, very short, just some of the experiences that I had as a park ranger in Yellowstone for 22 summers.
What does the 7899 mean?
Oh, that's a secret code.
No.
I'll tell you what it is. Those are the years I worked in Yellowstone.
Oh, 78 through 99.
You got it.
Oh.
Wow. Those summers as a ranger must have been a relief from some of the other heavy things, except in instances like this, of course. But being out in nature and being at Yellowstone must have been a nice segue for you.
Oh, it was. I always came back to a teaching high school with a lot of energy, and it was a dream job. I got to work on Yellowstone Lake as a boat ranger, and there were days where out there, out there on the lake, which is 30 miles across, and taking it all in, you know, seeing what we see, and going, gee, I'm getting paid to be out here on this lake. That's a pretty sweet job.
Yes.
And then my first summer there, here's the guy from Southern California. Oh, by the way, Rick, we're going to put you on the bear management team. And I'm going, excuse me, what does that mean? Well, we're going to send you to some training as far as, you know, trapping operations and that whole piece. And I go, okay. Yeah, well, the Yellowstone, Rick, you're now on the bear management team as well.
Okay, tell us a bear story, Rick.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Okay. twist my wrist here. Well, the story that I share with students is about a situation we had in Bridgeway Campground. We had a bear that decided to get into the campground and see what he could find. And so we had traps set up, and we were ready for him that evening. We had like two traps set up. And so I was monitoring the evening, and sure enough, we get a report that there is a grizz up in one of the loops. So I drove up in the area, and I'm watching the bear trap. And so I'm sitting in the patrol car, and this grizz appears out of nowhere. He walks up, and he's standing in front of my vehicle, just staring at me. You know, like, I swear, he's smiling at me. And he walks the bear trap. And he's been trapped before, okay? So we had placed cantaloupe watermelon outside the bear trap, and he worked it. He ate that, but he did not enter the trap. And then he gets up on top of the trap, and he's jumping up and down. This is unreal. How is this possible? And
yeah,
he was messing with us. And he walking off towards another loop, and these two young ladies appeared out of nowhere and walked up to me. It's like, what's going on? I said, here's what I'd like you to do. There's a comfort station right there behind you. I want you to go into the comfort station and make sure, you know, I want to make sure you're safe. Don't walk any further. It's dark out here, and I don't know where the grizz went. And they did. So I monitored that bear for the next couple hours, and he left the campground. He did not enter the bear trap. And so after 2 hours, I said, well, I guess I could go home now. He's gone. So the next morning, I go into the ranger station to see how we're doing. And the district ranger at the time, John Longsbury, says, hey, Rick, we have a complaint. What do you mean you have a complaint? You know the two ladies you told to go to the comfort station? They stayed there all night. Did you think Ranger Rick needs to make an apology? Yes, Ranger Rick, you need to go apologize to those visitors. There you go.
Oh, that bear owes you an apology.
So you go, but you don't come out, or we'll tell you when to come out.
Oh, dear.
How does your wife and family deal with this?
Well, my wife, she would often have the scanner on. Sometimes it was kind of an entertaining night for people who listen to the Rangers, you know, with situations we were involved in. So we had three kids, two dogs, and we filled that cabin in Fishing Bridge Village. So during the summer, you know, as a family, we packed up and headed the 1,200 miles to Yellowstone, and we were there for, you know, 3 months. And so the kids had some incredible summers growing up in Yellowstone with other Rangers families and kids, so it's definitely a lot of families involved, and you know, behind the scenes and making sure they support their significant other doing what they do, and as far as firefighting and search and rescue operations.
So listening to the scanner was entertainment, excitement, and sometimes fear.
Exactly. Never a dull moment, you know. Each day, you know, I'd head out the door, and my wife said, so what are you doing today? I said, oh, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Sometimes on a horse, sometimes in a helicopter, sometimes out walking down a backcountry trail.
You know, we read the information about the toll that jobs like yours take on those supporting our communities with the police force and with the Rangers.
Emergency
and
responders, yeah.
And it's a very high toll. How do you take care of yourself and meet your needs? And then I'd like to ask, would you recommend to young people they take on these stresses, and how could they possibly prepare to cope like you obviously have, Rick?
Well, first of all, I think a job in public safety is very rewarding. There have been some pretty special moments, and I think the highlight of my days as a park ranger is finding a three-year-old child who had disappeared in one of our campgrounds, and then being with the team. We found that child after hours of searching and took that child back to mom and on the radio, tell mom we have found her child. And going back to the incident command center, I looked around at some 20 Rangers, and most of those Rangers had a tear in their eyes when we handed that little one back to mom. So it can be very rewarding. And, you know, you were asking about the stress of the job. Yeah, there is that. And for me, I was a field training officer, and making sure that, you know, I talked to Rangers about taking care of yourself. I mean, there were times where I told Rangers I work with, get out of town, go to Bozeman, you know, go catch a movie, you know, do what you need to do for yourself, get out and do some bicycling, hiking, and take care of yourself, and make sure you spend time with your family, and again, always stress, hey, take care of yourself. So anytime we had a situation, you know, that where we lost somebody or a major event, we always had debriefings about the incident itself. But, okay, are you taking care of yourself? What are you doing for yourself? You know, what are you doing? How's your sleep? You know, make sure you take a look at alcohol consumption. Stay away from that. And be careful. You know, take care of yourself. So ongoing conversations, you know, with the people that I work with, whether it was Irvine PD or the National Park Service, you know, what are you doing to take care of yourself as far as getting out and, you know, doing activities that you enjoy, whether it's fishing or hunting or whatever you do, but take care of yourself and your family.
Do you feel like there could be more formal help situations set up for police officers and those experiencing these difficulties, or do you feel like it's pretty commensurate right now?
You know, I think it's in place. You know, for me as a Bozeman Police Commissioner, I have ongoing conversations with Chief Jim Veldekamp about, you know, how are we taking care of our officers. And, you know, they have get-togethers and barbecues where families can get together and interact with each other. And I see that with a lot of agencies. And I know in Yellowstone, what we did is we had a pie contest every year. So everybody was, okay, we're going to have this contest. Who can make the best pie, which area, and things like that. And barbecues where we brought everybody together and spent time together in those situations. Yeah, I think it's in place that agencies recognize that that needs to happen. I know for me, going back to when I first started, you know, I was on the job and there was a shooting, and the officer involved, and it was back on the street that same night. You know, I'm thinking, what were we doing then? And that doesn't happen anymore. There's debriefings. Make sure that officers are doing okay as far as the situation that they might have dealt with.
Our son-in-law is an emergency room physician, and he has told us a lot of stories about, you know, the stress on first responders. And he worked for about 10 years in the emergency room in East Texas. Since then, he's put together some electronic, if you will, computer systems to try to help first responders to coordinate care, to get better care for the clients, those who are, that the first responders are trying to help. But you're just kind of bringing back some of those memories and stories that he has mentioned about the very acute stress that the you guys are under much of the time.
Yes. And I think it's better now, but, you know, I've seen the stats about the high rate of suicide among law enforcement officers. And I look at that. I monitor that. I see the stories. And it's always, okay, well, how did that agency follow up on supporting that officer through that incident? And I know in different states they have different programs, and I actually attended a class in California for officers about, it was called After the Shooting, you know, what you're going to have to deal with as far as the media, your family, being judged as far as what had happened, you know, your actions, and here's what you will move through as far as an incident that you might have been involved in. And I know there's ongoing classes like that in place, and I decided, you know, early on that that's something I wanted to move through and take a look at, so I was aware of things I need to keep in mind if I got involved in a situation where there might have been a shooting.
I think that it behooves us all to maybe consider baking cookies for our police officers, sending pizzas over to the station, always trying to be supportive when we meet a police officer, because you all, except for those girls in the bathroom, are putting yourselves on the line for us.
You know, this community is very supportive of public safety, fire and police, and I know I often see you know, goodies dropped by the station after a major incident. Hey, we just want you to know that we support what you're doing and thank you for your service. So this community does that. It happens.
I'm glad to hear that. And everyone out there, consider what you might be able to take by and drop off, whether it's a note, a letter, cookies, maybe a big pile of tacos or something.
sure would be appreciated.
There seems to be quite a screening done for people to get into to your field. What would you recommend to a young person, again, who wants to get into this area, a first response, police work or otherwise?
Well, they need to take a closer look at it. You know, there are things that we have, like the Citizen Police Academy, that happens once a year. I know the Sheriff's Department does the same thing. They have a citizen program where people can come in and take a look at what it means to be in law enforcement. And some agencies give people a chance to do a ride-along. You know, you have somebody who is considering a career in law enforcement, you know, to see if that department's doing a ride-along program. And, you know, if the opportunity presents itself, like in the schools, you know, we have school resource officers at the high schools, both high schools and middle school. And you know, what I see almost every day are students at Galvin High School or Bozeman High School who come up and have conversations with our school resource officers about what they do and, you know, considering going into public safety. So that there are opportunities, you know, for people to engage, to have a conversation at school with their SROs.
Stacy Zinn, when she was with us, talked about being in high school, and that's what influenced her. There was an undercover narcotics person at the school, and she was able to learn from him, and it shaped her whole future career. And so she said that in order to be one of the agents on the DEA team, she had to have a college degree. And
yes.
And so you would say to young people out there, get your education and maybe focus on psychology and criminal law and those things that would be helpful, and then apply. Is that how it would work, Rick?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's that approach to it. When I talk to students, I tell them that, you know, if you're going to work for a federal agency, you know, whether you're a DEA or FBI, Secret Service, you need a degree. It doesn't have to be in criminology. It can be in any field. You know, you've completed a program that shows that, you know, you've been successful academically, and they're looking for people that will be successful. And, you know, we do hire people with an Associate of Arts degree, and through the vetting process, we learn, you know, if they're up to the requirements and challenges of working in public safety, whether it's fire or police. I do share that with students, and I had an incredible experience with a young man who he did a ride along with me when I worked for Irvine PD, you know, as a reserve part time. And so he did this ride along with me. He was in my driver's training class, and you know, years later, you know, he'd gone to college, he'd gotten his degree, and went to work for the police department that I was working for. And when we moved up here, I learned that he had become the police chief.
How fantastic.
He emailed and thanked me for that ride-along.
Oh, yes.
He said, got me interested in going into law enforcement. And years go by, and he became the police chief of Irvine Police Department.
Oh, my.
Fully incredible.
What is the breakdown between males and females in the that go into this line of work?
Well, you know, I've worked with some incredible women over the years. My first supervisor was Alice Seebecker and Yellowstone at Lake Ranger Station. She had very, you know, gifted, talented, skillful park ranger in so many ways. And I do remember a situation where I was riding with Alice. I was driving the car, and someone came up to me and started to ask me questions. I said, no, I want you to talk to my supervisor, and Alice can answer those questions. And there I recognized, you know, what people do often, you know. Rather than talk to Alice, this visitor came up to me. I said, no, I'd like you to talk to Alice here. She can answer that question. Mm-hmm. And she's my supervisor. There you go.
Good one. Well, I don't want you to get too far afield. We've just got a minute, but we want to thank the Elks for all that they're doing. And we thank you for coming to be with us, Rick, so very much.
Well, you're welcome. And here I am, storytelling again, just like I do as a substitute teacher, a little entertainment before we launch into that chemistry lesson.
Oh, I know they fully appreciate that, as do we.
We want to thank you very much, and I'm sure the people listening will do the same. They love this kind of information and the stories as well. One quick question: did you guys make your own pies, or did you buy them for that pie supper thing?
Oh no, we made them.
Oh,
made the best pies ever.
Oh, I've got a good pie recipe for you, Rick.
You have to send it to me, and I'll share that with my wife, Chris.
All right.
To the Gallatin Valley audience, this is KGVM 95.9 or KGVM.org. Go to that. Look down for the health and happiness area, and you can listen to any past program that's been in at least the last year or so, including this one. So this is KGVM 95.9. Thank you for listening.